This is Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, your daily voice in Washington, D.C. on the issues of faith, family, and freedom. And now, here's your host, Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Well, hello, everyone, and welcome to Washington Watch. Coming up, big win for Senator Ted Cruz last night in Wisconsin in the race for the Republican nomination. Cruz won 36 of the 42 delegates yesterday, which almost guarantees the Republican contest will be decided in Cleveland at the Republican convention in July. Scott Rasmussen is here to do the math and provide analysis in just a moment. And we'll take another look at the troubling developments with Russia. Are we seeing the return of what Ronald Reagan called the evil empire? Arkansas Senator Tom Cotton joins me for that conversation. Also, is big business undermining their own way forward by becoming puppets of the LGBTQ activist? PayPal is the latest to jump into North Carolina, claiming they are not going to do an expansion because the state is prohibiting men from using girls' restrooms and locker rooms. Is there a little hypocrisy here on the part of these companies that are doing business in countries that actually kill and imprison homosexuals and transvestites? North Carolina Congressman Robert Pittenger is here on that topic. The website, TonyPerkins.com. You can find out more about today's topics. Our website, again, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, at T Perkins. All right, let me just remind you again, April the 17th, Stand with the Persecuted. You can find out more about that at TonyPerkins.com. We're encouraging churches across the nation to take just a few moments on that Sunday morning to draw attention to what Open Doors USA says is an unprecedented level of persecution of Christians worldwide. To find out more how your church can participate, go to TonyPerkins.com. All right, let me preface this first interview once again with this disclaimer. Washington Watch and our related affiliates do not support or oppose candidates for president or any office. Any endorsements made are strictly in a personal capacity and do not represent the Washington Watch program or our affiliates. All right, after last night's decisive victory in Wisconsin for Ted Cruz, most see the GOP contest not being decided until the candidates and delegates show up in Cleveland, Ohio in July. Joining me now to help us do the math and provide analysis on the GOP race is the founder of Rasmussen Reports and the president of STIRC, Scott Rasmussen. Scott, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Great to be with you again.
Well, Scott, what did we learn last night from the results in Wisconsin?
Hello?
Yeah, are you there, Scott? Did I lose you? Scott, can you hear me? I don't know what happened there. We lost him. Yesterday in Wisconsin, 42 delegates up for grabs. And of those delegates, Ted Cruz got 36 of the 42. Significant win strategically because you got 2 weeks now. Well, you got Wyoming over the weekend, a caucus, I believe it's a caucus, not a huge state, but looks favorable for Ted Cruz. Then you're 2 weeks away from New York. Big state, but this is a state in which I think Scott's going to talk to this, but that Donald Trump has to do extremely well. That's his home state. But the dynamics of last night has an impact going forward. I think we have him back. Scott, are you there?
I am here, Tony. Sorry about that. We're driving down the Jersey Turnpike, and I guess we hit a bad patch.
Not a problem. All right, my question is this. What do you make of last night's victory for Ted Cruz in Wisconsin? What does that do for the GOP contest?
Well, the first thing is it was a very significant victory. In that it looks like, at least in Wisconsin, Ted Cruz consolidated the vote, the support of all the people that do not want Donald Trump as their nominee. Now, part of that may be because Scott Walker is such a popular figure in Wisconsin Republican circles. He gave a strong endorsement. And that may also provide a model for other Republican leaders to be aware of, that when leaders stand up opposed to Donald Trump, they're getting some support. So that's the first thing. The second is there is no way that anybody is going to go to Cleveland with 1,237 pledged delegates. There will be a chance for lots of things to happen, but I expect the nominee will be either Ted Cruz or Donald Trump. because nobody else will have the legitimacy going forward to be considered.
And the Republicans have to be very careful about that, because it's already going to be the fact that we're having a contested convention, which we really haven't seen since Gerald Ford and Ronald Reagan. They're going to have to be very careful, because everybody's going to be watching and the rules are going to be very important. And it would be very hard to explain why someone who was not the top in the top vote getting of delegates would come away with the nomination.
That's correct. And let's be clear, it doesn't mean necessarily the person who has the most pledged delegates will actually have to get the nomination. There are going to be 300 or 400 unbound delegates, either because their states elected them without a preference or because they were initially for some other candidate. That's a bigger pool of delegates than you can win in any state. Donald Trump and Ted Cruz are going to be competing for them. It is possible that either of those men could win a first ballot victory by winning over those delegates. Right now, Ted Cruz is doing a much better job. In North Dakota last week, they selected delegates. Out of 28 delegates, only one supported Donald Trump. So, you know, this is a contest to watch. It's not getting the media coverage, but it's a very important part of the process.
So, Scott, kind of the unbound delegates and the delegates that will be kind of free agents, and it all depends upon... Scott, did we lose you again? Let's see if we get him back here. Oh, we lost him. It's that New Jersey Turnpike, I tell you. Maybe Chris Christie is monitoring this call from the New Jersey Turnpike. I don't know. The dynamics here is you have these unbound delegates, right? That's one category. You have delegates, for instance, that went to Marco Rubio. Now, depending upon the state, they may only be bound on the first round of voting, and then they may be free. Other states, it's multiple rounds. Those delegates become very important when you're trying to get to that magical number of 1,237 that Scott made reference to. Right now, here's the standing. Donald Trump has 755 delegates that he has won. You have Ted Cruz has 517. John Kasich has 143. All right. Well, I think we got Scott back. I think Chris Christie's monitoring your call from the New Jersey Turnpike there. let me ask you, the unbound delegates, the delegates that could become free agents after the first round, are those kind of like the super delegates that are unpredictable within the Democratic ranks?
Not at all. The super delegates on the Democratic side are a bunch of office holders who are guaranteed their slot. And their specific purpose is to make sure the establishment of the Democratic Party stays in control. On the Republican side, a number of states, five states, elect their delegates specifically as free agents. They are not bound by a presidential preference. On top of that, in the state of Pennsylvania, 54 of the 71 delegates are elected directly. They're elected as a delegate, not as a representative of a campaign. And then on top of that, you do have some that were, say, a Marco Rubio delegate who will eventually be put into the unbound pool. So these are people who are elected through the normal process, but they do not have a stated preference.
So in essence, the Republican Party is more Democratic than the Democratic Party when it comes to the delegates.
That's a great way to put it, and I think it's a really important distinction, because these delegates, you know, in Colorado, for example, they're picking delegates through an ongoing process. These were the rules set up ahead of time. They are selected through a process at the state level, and the Cruz campaign has been better organized to attract these delegates than the Trump campaign. And I suspect what that means as we move forward is you'll start to see the Cruz campaign close the gap on the delegate count, because they're winning so many of these other delegates.
You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins, my guest, Scott Rasmussen. Scott, that would suggest, as you said this, Scott, still got you? We may have lost him again. Well, that turnpike, a terrible place. What I want to ask him about is the organization that is reflected in the Cruz campaign, the importance of that going into the convention and winning over these delegates. how far in advance does that need to be done? I mean, here's the point. Does Ted Cruz have an advantage because he's been working the country with this infrastructure? And how likely, or is it even possible, that Donald Trump could catch up? Because all right, Scott, we got you back.
Well, I'm back. Okay. I'm sorry we're having this difficulty today.
Not a problem. Here's the question I was asking is you made reference to this. Ted Cruz, good organization across the country. You know, it's reflected especially in caucuses where he wins really hands down. For Donald Trump to be able – and this is – does that give him an advantage into the convention that he has this network – and the grassroots, and is there time for Donald Trump to make up for his lack of that infrastructure?
Well, it certainly gives Ted Cruz an advantage. And in fact, I would say right now that if Donald Trump is unable to win on the first ballot, Ted Cruz is almost certain to win on the second ballot. The Trump campaign has hired a veteran, Paul Manafort, to head up their delegate process. I'm not sure that he has enough time to really do all they need to do. But I think there's something else that we're missing here, and that goes back to the last time there was a contested convention. Ronald Reagan lost. He fought all the way to the end. He won states down the stretch. And he, at the end of the day, despite all the bitterness between he and his campaign and the Ford campaign, he gave a very gracious concession speech. He worked hard for Gerald Ford in the fall campaign, and Ronald Reagan, after that election, became one of the leaders of the Republican Party and was elected president 4 years later. Ted Cruz and Donald Trump will both have a lot of incentive to support the other at the end of this convention. And hard as it is to believe today, I think there will be a really good opportunity for the Republican Party to be united after the convention, and partly because it's in the incentive or the interest of those guys to do so, partly because all Republicans will want to beat Hillary Clinton.
Of course, that takes the ability to look beyond oneself and look to the benefit of the nation and the party. Another example of that would be the next election when Ronald Reagan actually won a bitter contest with George Bush, but he chose George Bush as his running mate.
Right. And let me be clear, I am not actually suggesting that this requires either Donald Trump or Ted Cruz to look beyond themselves. I am saying it will be in their own best interest to do so. Mm-hmm. For example, if Ted Cruz were to go into the convention with a lot of unpledged delegates and win the nomination, Donald Trump would have some incentives for his own brand, for his own influence on the next president, to support Ted Cruz, and the reverse would also be true.
All right, got to leave it there, Scott. Thanks so much for joining us, and drive safely on that turnpike.
Thank you, Tony.
All right, Scott Rasmussen. To find out more, go to the website, TonyPerkins.com. You heard it here. If Trump doesn't win on the first ballot in Cleveland, Ted Cruz wins the nomination. That's from Scott Rasmussen. He knows the numbers. All right, folks, when we come back, Arkansas Senator Tom Cotton joins us to talk all things Russia. Don't go away. We're right back with more Washington Watch right after this.
Does the U.S. Senate have a responsibility to confirm anyone that President Obama nominates to fill Justice Scalia's vacated seat? After the passing of U.S. Supreme Court Justice Antonin Scalia, an intense political debate has emerged around this crucial question. The Constitution does not require conditions or limitations on the manner in which the Senate must act if the president nominates. Family Research Council believes that the Senate should not consider or deliberate on any nominee President Obama puts forward to fill Justice Scalia's vacated seat. This is because the president has consistently nominated Supreme Court justices and federal judges who view the Constitution as a malleable political instrument instead of a text with a defined meaning based on the consensus held by the Founding Fathers. To learn more about this critical issue, including 8 helpful questions and answers, visit frc.org/Supreme Court. That's frc.org/Supreme Court.
Hope Rains is responding to families in need following flooding in Greenville, Mississippi. Greenville is among many communities severely impacted by flooding in the Delta region. Volunteers are needed now. Here's 8 Days of Hope President Steve Tiber.
We need your help today. I mean, it's that simple. We're looking for people who just want to serve others. You know, you don't have to be super gifted. Every disaster gives an opportunity for a believer to share a glimpse of Jesus Christ. You know, the best sermon I ever heard was the one I saw. We're just there to love others as God commands us. And here's where you and I get to be the hands and feet of Jesus Christ.
To volunteer and help the flood victims of Greenville, Mississippi, please email HopeRains at 8daysofhope.com. This relief effort is for God's glory. Come and be the gospel in action. For more information, visit 8daysofhope.com. And please pray for this relief effort and for the families affected by this disaster. Hope Reigns is a ministry division of 8 Days of Hope.
I've been listening to AFR for probably 27 or 8 years. Got hooked on it. I've gotten educated, try to stay informed, and it helps me to be grounded. Heard a lot of good preaching, informative programs like Sandy Rios and Brian Fisher. But spiritually, I've grown a lot, gotten more grounded, and really firm in my beliefs. I was raised in church, but there's things that even a Christian can compromise on if they're not really grounded in the Word. And it's kind of like you want to tell your kids, put yourself in this situation and know how you're going to respond before you're there. And you don't have to think about it or try to make a decision then. You already know what you believe. And AFR has helped me to become a more grounded Christian.
You can hear more stories of changed lives during our 3-day share-a-thon starting April 12th. American Family Radio, 25 years on the battlefront for your family.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. Glad to have you with us on this Wednesday afternoon. The website, TonyPerkins.com, if you're on Twitter, at T Perkins. Again, let me remind you, April the 17th, Stand with the Persecuted. Your church can be a part of standing with churches across the nation to draw attention to the plight of our brothers and sisters in Christ who are being persecuted, tortured, driven from their homes, and literally their lives taken from them for no other reason than that they are followers of Jesus Christ. What can you do? Well, join us on April the 17th. Go to the website, TonyPerkins.com. Follow links over resources there for how your church can be a part of this. All right. In just a moment, Arkansas Senator Tom Cotton is going to join us. Earlier this week, we were discussing the reality that Russia, in spite of the 2010 New START arms treaty, which the Obama administration negotiated with Russia, Russia has actually grown their nuclear warhead stockpile by 153 over the past year. Now, in that same period, the U.S. has shrunk our stockpile by 57. Now, let me be clear, the treaty is not yet in effect. It begins in February of 2018. But Russia is moving in the opposite direction. Now, they now exceed the limit that will take effect in February of 2018. So, I mean, what's the point? Are they gonna are they gonna do away with those once we hit that deadline? I mean, they now have 1,648 warheads. They exceed the limit of 1,550 that will take effect in February of 2018. In fact, the Russia Defense Ministry has announced they're actually building new missiles that will be able to carry multiple nuclear warheads. Now, is this reason for us to be concerned? Well, that's as soon as we get the senator, that's what we're going to talk about. It's really interesting to me. Remember Ronald Reagan in 1983 called Russia the evil empire. Of course, that was a very, very controversial speech. And that's the thing about Ronald Reagan is that, you know, he was controversial in his day. Now he's very mild when you look back on what he said. But he was willing to call evil, evil. And he challenged Russia. And, of course, you remember his challenge to tear down the wall, which that speech he made in Berlin. And guess what happened? the wall came down. But here we are. You know, that was in, we're 25 years later. And what do we see? We see Russia now, as we talked about earlier this week, according to the chairman of the Joint Chiefs, Russia is the greatest threat that we face. General Joseph Dunford, who is the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, told Congress that Russia continues to pose the greatest threat to the United States. Now, consider that. Consider what all is happening in the world and how we have, under this administration, the policies that has led to complete turmoil in the Middle East. And you've got China becoming very aggressive. You've got North Korea, who is, that country is led by a lunatic. But here's the problem. They're armed and they're dangerous. Consider all that. And the chairman of the Joint Chiefs says Russia poses the greatest threat to the United States. What does that tell you about the world? We're living in a very dangerous neighborhood. I don't know about you, but this is a factor in who we should select as our leader. It's a factor for me. I want somebody who is going to do exactly what Ronald Reagan did when he came in as president. I joined shortly after he was elected in his first round. I joined the Marine Corps, so I served under Ronald Reagan as he rebuilt the military. The military had fallen into really disarray, decline under Jimmy Carter in the post-Vietnam era. And he came back. He pulled ships out of mothballs to build up the Navy. He directed money to our military because his policy was peace through strength. You're not weakness. Weakness secures nothing but a place in history, because you're probably going to go down. It secures nothing. It does not secure peace. It does not secure your future. And we need a leader, a bold leader, that's going to do something very similar. So Russia is a very significant threat. All right, we haven't been able to reach the center. I don't know what happened there, but we'll see if we can't get him back on another occasion. Watch this. And this is another one of those deals that this administration has negotiated, just like Iran. I mean, think about this. This was the Obama administration negotiating this deal against, really, there was a lot of opposition to this. And we were going to tie our hands and have to trust Russia to live by the agreement. They've already exceeded it. No indication that they're going to live by it. We, on the other hand, are eliminating our nuclear weapons so that they're going to outnumber us, and they're also deploying new developments while we're patching together with duct tape and hog wire our current military armament. They're investing money in developing new technologies. Dangerous times, folks. We need to be praying. All right. We got the center. We'll have to come back with him a little bit later. Coming up next, North Carolina Congressman Robert Pittenger joins me to talk about the hypocrisy of big business that could be digging their own financial grave by doing the bidding of the LGBT community. That's coming up next here on Washington Watch. And then later we're going to try to get to your phone calls as well. Don't go away. We're back with more Washington Watch right after this.
making the most of your money. Here's Dan Celia.
A lot of things impacting the markets, the economy this week. But nonetheless, it seems like the big mover in oil may be extending its gains for a little while longer. Two things have happened in the oil sector that is, well, good for the economy, but certainly good for the markets. And one is that we've seen a dramatic decrease in supplies. As a matter of fact, down, supplies fell 4.9 million barrels last week. That news just out, and that's pretty good news. That's a 5 million barrel drop. It's pretty significant. That would mean a couple of things, that obviously some production cuts that have happened primarily by the U.S. since everybody else refuses to cut is having an impact. I don't necessarily think it's demand because we don't see any evidence of that, but we do continue to see this decrease in supply, and that is going to prop up oil prices to at least stabilize a little bit for the week. Also in the news, Kuwait, who is a pretty powerful player in OPEC, has indicated that they, along with some other OPEC nations and some outside of OPEC, are willing to talk about, and that's what they're doing, about making production cuts. Now, this is perfect for Saudi Arabia, who controls most of it, because it plays right into their hand. They're not cutting because Iran's not cutting, so they get to continue their production. But look, these other countries are coming to the realization that they're in survival mode, and they've got to see prices start to go up a little bit. Now, none of this is good for us as we see gasoline prices go up along with it. But overall, I think it'll be good for stability in the markets.
Want to hear more financial advice from Dan Celia? Then look for his podcast when you visit the website afr.net.
Washington Watch, I'm Tony Perkins. The website, tonyperkins.com, if you're on Twitter, at tperkins. All right, big business may be creating a big problem for themselves. Big corporations have become puppets for gay activists by weighing in against religious liberty measures in various states. The latest example is PayPal, that claims, and I emphasize claims, they are not going to do an expansion in North Carolina because the state legislature there, listen to this, they overturned an ordinance in Charlotte that forced businesses and public facilities to open up their restrooms and locker rooms to anyone of any sex. I mean, think of that. Denying a man the right to access a girl's restroom? I mean, how dare they? I mean, this kind of stuff would have been laughable 5 years ago, 2 years ago. But here's the thing. The hypocrisy of these companies is breathtaking. As North Carolina Congressman Robert Pittenger points out, quote, PayPal does business in 25 countries where homosexual behavior is illegal, including five countries where the penalty is death. Yet they object to North Carolina and their legislature overturning a misguided ordinance about letting men into the women's bathrooms. Perhaps PayPal would like to try and clarify this seemingly very hypocritical position, end quote. Joining me is the representative from the 11th Congressional District of North Carolina, Congressman Robert Pittenger. Robert, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Hello, Dr. Perkins. Great to talk to you.
Now, I understand you're in South America working to block terrorists from gaining financing. I want to thank you for taking time out to join us from a busy schedule. But you've called out PayPal for their hypocrisy. Have you gotten any response from them?
I haven't gotten it back from them, but, you know, I try to give people some measure of respect, at least as a company who has the right to make their own corporate decisions, but it's so disingenuous. When you consider that they're in Nigeria, Somalia, Mauritania, Saudi Arabia, and Yemen, the penalty is death for homosexuality in these countries. Their own international headquarters is in Singapore, and that's homosexuality activity. That's illegal there. They've got offices in Malaysia and India. Homosexuality is illegal in those countries. So the hypocrisy is beyond any other consideration. I mean, the reality is that PayPal wants to get involved in a fight with the liberal agenda, and those who are driving it, these activists, are trying to make some type of case that frankly just doesn't make sense. I think the legislature acted accordingly. I believe the governor did the right thing by signing the bill. It's about protecting people. You know, we can't just make laws that protect a few people and harm others. And you know, we're hearing from the NBA that they're threatening to move the 2017 All-Star game from Charlotte. Well, you know, the NBA works to expand in China right now. Where could there be more lack of human rights and liberties? You know, it's is that real tolerance? You know, Christians, we're supposed to love and respect everybody, but reality is that we have to make laws that protect everyone, and we can't allow a law for someone, misguided, emotionally unstable person, to go in and to the bathroom and potentially harm a young child or display themselves to a woman.
But
now, that doesn't make sense.
Congressman, if a business wants to do that, they're free to do so. They can do that. Nothing prohibits them from doing it. But part of this is shifting the responsibility to that. They want the state to tell them to do it. So, number one, they don't have the political responsibility. And two, they don't have the legal responsibility to provide a safe place.
Absolutely. They're hiding. They join in the stink because they don't want to make that moral choice for themselves. And they understand the outcomes. You know, you have to be real in terms of what's going to outcomes that are negative, unintended consequences of legislation. And we're so quick in this culture to knee-jerk and pass bills that do things. In fact, it's what the city council did. Mm-hmm. And they never should have done to begin with. It wasn't a prudent bill. So I think reason has prevailed by the way of the legislature, and they've done the right thing.
Congressman Pittenger, let me ask you about this because I know you're a businessman. You've been in business. You see companies that go to places like North Carolina. They go to Mississippi. They go to Georgia. They go to places that have favorable business environments. Number one, they have a solid workforce, usually right-to-work states, a fair tax climate. That's driven by conservative legislators who also understand the value of social conservative policy. Are they not in the long run hurting themselves by attacking and opposing the very conservatives who defend them and help make an environment where they can be successful?
Well, the liberal agenda, and it's backed by the media, and they're supporting this. There's so much hype that's been stirred up right now and so much intense pressure. It's put on them, and corporate America generally folds their cards and doesn't want to get in there and make the real case for the honest decision, what they know is truly the best thing. They do not want to be in the public limelight, and they want to defuse an issue as soon as they can.
Yeah. Congressman Pittenger, thanks so much for taking time out from your trip there to South America to join us today.
Thank you, Dr. Perkins. I appreciate your great work.
Our
country is a better country because of you.
Thank you so much. Congressman Robert Pittenger from the 11th Congressional District of North Carolina. All right, I'm going to continue this conversation because I want to talk about PayPal. I want to talk about where I think business has taking a very short-sighted view of this, and it's going to come back to haunt them. But first, when we come back, we're going to be joined by Senator Tom Cotton of Arkansas to have that conversation about Russia. So don't go away. We're back with a lot more of Washington Watch right on the other side of this break.
God who gave us life gave us liberty. Hello, everyone. I'm Tim Wildman. Do you know who said that? That was Thomas Jefferson. Thomas Jefferson, Mr. Secularist. Mr. Separation of Church and State, you've heard so much about. Well, he's the one who said, God, who gave us life, gave us liberty. We're going to be going to the Jefferson Memorial when we go on our spiritual heritage tour of Washington, D.C. and Mount Vernon in June and September. Now, June's about full. We have some seats left in September. We'll see all of our nation's capital from a distinctively Christian perspective with Stephen McDowell of the Providence Foundation leading us around the city. We're also going to be going to Williamsburg, Jamestown, and Yorktown if you'd like to take that tour with us as well. The tours are back-to-back. You can go on one or both of the tours with us. We'd really like to have you join us. For all the information, go to spiritualheritagetours.com. spiritualheritagetours.com.
AFA Action Alerts. They're more than just alerts. They're a lifeline to the information you need to keep your family safe. If you already receive them, you know how vital they are, often bringing information you can't get anywhere else. They also have any documentation and contact information necessary for you to take action without having to research it yourself. If you're not on the list to receive Action Alerts, why not sign up today? Just visit AFA.net and take action. That's AFA.net.
The Decision America Tour with Franklin Graham.
I'm traveling to all 50 states to hold prayer rallies. We're asking Christians to take a stand and pray and engage in your community by living and sharing your faith at home, in public, and at the ballot box. And I'm going to be sharing the gospel.
You'll find rally dates and locations, plus information on how you can be involved at DecisionAmericaTour.com.
Now is the time to take a stand.
I started listening to the AFR probably 2 years ago. I was just going through the stations, and I believe it was Brian Fisher that was on. And at first, I didn't like him. I thought he was a little too bold for me. But the more I listened, the more my attitude started changing. And I think, as far as I was concerned, he hit the spot. He filled a void that was in me as far as... And it's not only Brian, it's a lot of the other people also. And I just stayed with it. I love the way they talk about the Lord. And like I said, how they, the message never changes as far as political correctness.
American Family Radio is making a difference. You can hear more stories of changed lives during our three-day Share-a-thon starting April 12th. American Family Radio, 25 years on the battlefront for your family.
Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. Glad to have you along on this Wednesday afternoon. The website, TonyPerkins.com. On Twitter, at TPerkins. All right. I think we're going to get the senator here in a moment. Let me continue this conversation I was having. We have him now. All right. Let me welcome to the program the senator from the state of Arkansas, Senator Tom Cotton. Senator, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hey, Tony. It's great to be on with you again.
Hey, thanks for joining us. I ended up having a conversation with myself about this, but I want to ask you this question. As we look at what's happening in Russia, last month, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs said that Russia poses the greatest threat to the United States. We see them moving in the opposite direction that they should be going when it comes to the New START treaty that the Obama administration negotiated with them in 2010. Are we looking at the return of what Ronald Reagan called the evil empire?
Well, Tony, unfortunately, Russia has gotten much more dangerous over the last 7 years under President Obama, but really over the last 16 years since Vladimir Putin's rise to power. Russia, in a way, is the number one threat we face and always will be, because Russia alone has the nuclear arsenal to destroy the United States, to perhaps eliminate the human race if it came to that nuclear war. That's one reason why it's so important that, as Reagan did, we draw firm lines with Russian aggression, whether that's Russian aggression in Georgia in 2008, in Ukraine in 2014, or in the Middle East, in Syria, in 2015 and 2016. And as you mentioned about the New START treaty, that was a one-sided treaty that favored Russia's development of new nuclear weapons against the United States, which had to draw down our arsenal. And just last week in the latest data exchange, we learned that, strangely, they have a larger number of warheads now, not to mention the much larger arsenal of tactical nuclear weapons they have. This is a very troubling development for the United States, and therefore a troubling development for the whole world.
When you look at this and you say a one-sided agreement negotiated with Russia by the United States, we're drawing down, they're building up, this sounds like a pattern. I mean, it's also what we're seeing in Iran.
We saw it with Cuba as well. No, it is a pattern, Tony, that the president, especially, after the interview that Jeff Goldberg did with him in the Atlantic Monthly recently, clearly thinks that the United States foreign policy over the last several decades has not served United States interests. that we've got too many allies around the world, that they're free riders that tend to just draw us into problems, and that the enemies we have, enemies like Iran, are in part, maybe in large part, of our own making. And greater understanding, greater concessions, and conciliation with those enemies would help protect U.S. interests. I would think 7 years of reality would dissuade the president from these views. I mean, extending a hand to Iran has only made them more aggressive throughout the Middle East and got them a one-sided nuclear deal. The so-called Russian reset has done nothing to reset relations with Vladimir Putin except for resetting them on his own terms. And then, as I mentioned, in Cuba, it's probably the least strategically consequential decision because of that nation's small, impoverished status. But it's even more one-sided than any other policy the president has had. He consistently has coddled and appeased our adversaries and treated our allies with contempt and disdain.
So, Senator Cotton, with that in mind, I mean, we live in a very dangerous world. When you consider that, as you said, Russia, because of their capacity, is our greatest threat, but you look at the Middle East, you look at China, look at North Korea, the next president who comes into the Oval Office is going to walk in on day one with a very difficult situation staring them right in the face.
That's true, Tony. And the next president is going to have some of the most diverse, complex, and challenging security threats that the United States has faced, not just since the end of the Cold War, but since the end of World War II. And you have the rest of the world, most of which is friendly towards the United States, to greater or lesser degrees, is looking for a United States that will once again lead in the world, that will help provide a framework for international security as we have for 70 years. 70 pretty good years, I would have to add. 70 years in which we have not had an outbreak of great power war, as we did twice in the first half of the 20th century and innumerable times before that. In fact, I was visiting recently with the head of state of one of our NATO allies, a small country, but a critical country that does unique things for us no other country could do in the world. And we asked the head of state what more that we should tell our colleagues back in Washington, and that head of state said, "You need a new U.S. president who understands the need for leadership in the world." That's pretty stark.
Well, that sums it up. I mean, that's exactly what's needed. Senator, I want to thank you for taking time to join us this afternoon. I want to ask you one final question. As I know you serve on the Armed Services Committee in the Senate, on the Senate Intelligence Committee, you're also a combat veteran in the United States Army. So I know you're very plugged in and concerned about our nation's military. What's going to have to happen for us to rebuild our military and bring it to a point where it has the strength to secure our peace?
The military needs a substantial budget increase, Tony. You can dig down in the numbers and get exact figures, but I think we're looking on an order of magnitude of about $100 billion more, hopefully, under a new administration, an emergency spending bill. And that's going to have to be dedicated towards today's readiness, equipping and training our troops and manning their units, all of which have declined under the Obama administration. It also has to go to modernization of our conventional forces, like our aircraft carrier fleet, or purchasing new or more joint strike fighters, building out new land vehicles for the Army and the Marine Corps, and then finally to modernizing our nuclear arsenal, which is as old as it's ever been. We're going to have to design new nuclear weapons. We need to modernize the missiles that carry them. We're in the process of building a brand new bomber and building new ballistic missile submarines. All three of those things are going to have to happen, and it's going to be a substantial investment of new money. But I don't think there's any better return than for the American taxpayer than investing in their military, not only to fight and win our wars, but hopefully to deter them from ever happening in the first place, because our military supremacy is unmatched in the world.
Right, and that was Ronald Reagan's view, peace through strength. The morale, I mean, we're seeing a low in the morale. We've seen the highest rates of suicide among those who serve in uniform. The social policy that has been thrust upon the military by this administration, which has made this a very complex and troubling situation. Is there a way to unwind that and bring back the morale of those who serve?
No, you're certainly right about some of those concerns, Tony. And this goes back as well to the budget crunch our military has faced. If you look at the Army, they've been losing over 10,000 troops per year from their high a few years ago. That's not just bad for our national security because we might lack adequate troop numbers to deter and, if necessary, fight the next war, which is a problem we had in the early days of the last war. But it's also very bad for morale of our troops. When you're an E7 or you're a major and you're told that there's not enough spots for you, when you get a letter saying you're going to have to retire early and therefore your retirement's going to be a little lower, you're not going to be able to continue to serve out a job in which you take great pride, that's very harmful for our morale. Also harmful for our soldiers, sailors, airmen, and Marines, not just today, but for tomorrow as well, because we're losing thousands of years of collective combat experience. And you can always make a new private or a new lieutenant in a few months, but you can't give them the kind of battle-hardened experience that our senior non-commissioned officers and our field grade officers have received over the last 15 years.
That's absolutely right, and I've had that conversation with General Boykin here on my team numerous times. Senator, thanks so much for joining us. As always, appreciate having the conversation.
Great to be on with you, Tony. Thank you very much.
All right. Senator Tom Cotton of Arkansas. To find out more, go to the website, TonyPerkins.com. Look, a lot of work ahead of the next administration, but essential. Our military is on course, if unchecked, and the trend not turned, to be at a readiness level that we've not seen since before World War II. But yet the world is arguably a much more dangerous place because it's not just one or two isolated threats we face. It is literally global. And, of course, you add to that the, like, ISIS terrorism that is also lurking out there. I tell you, if that doesn't drive you to your knees, I don't know what will. All right, I want to finish this conversation that we were talking about to PayPal and big business weighing in on these religious liberty bills. Now, PayPal, very much like Angie's List in Indiana back when Mike Pence signed a religious freedom law and then business jumped on him and they got cold feet and they retreated and put up the white flag. And Angie's List was one of the said they're not going to do an expansion in Indianapolis because of it. Well, a lot of conservatives then went after Angie's List, canceled their subscriptions. It was interesting. You don't read about this in the press. They're not going to tell this story. But the CEO of Angie's List, who founded the company, was basically forced out because they took a turn south. Now, I don't know if that's going to happen to PayPal. You do as you please. I know there's been it's just kind of funny watching as we're looking at this. We've been using PayPal at FRC. I personally have used it, but not for much longer. I'm looking at alternatives and how we do that because it's, you know, when you're doing transactions electronically, it is a convenience and it's also a security issue. But, for those of you on the left who have been trolling today, take note. PayPal will not be on our website for much longer as we look for another means to which our constituents can easily make contributions to us. And I personally will be ending my PayPal account too. So those of you who have been foaming at the mouth on the left today, take it easy. We're gonna be ditching PayPal as PayPal shows their hypocrisy about demanding the right of men to walk into girls' bathrooms in the state of North Carolina. But here's the bigger picture here, folks. And I can speak to this from experience as a legislator who had a very good record with the business community because, quite frankly, I believe in free markets. I believe they're in line with biblical principles. And when you have free markets and you allow business to do what they're supposed to do, make products, deliver services, it's good for the economy and it's good for the environment. It's good for everybody. So, I was supportive of business, of lower government regulation, eliminating a lot of these unnecessary zoning laws, so on and so forth. And that's true with most conservatives. And that has historically been the case. The most reliable votes for free enterprise, bar none, have been full portfolio conservatives, meaning conservatives, people, individuals, elected officials who are conservative on social issues, those that are conservative on fiscal issues, meaning taxes and regulation, and those on foreign policy. All right, that's a full portfolio conservative. Those have been the most conservative, or I'm sorry, the most reliable and consistent supporters for the business community. Now, all of a sudden, the business community, big business, has been hijacked, and I wouldn't say it's necessarily involuntarily. Maybe, I don't know, maybe some of the Stockholm syndrome, I don't know. But I wouldn't necessarily say they're being held hostage by the LGBT community, but they're certainly being used as puppets. But I don't think they've thought through this, because who's going to come to their defense to help get those favorable tax environments, which is why you see businesses going to North Carolina, you see them going to Mississippi, you see them going to Louisiana, you see them going to Texas. Why aren't businesses flocking to California? It's not just because they have bad social policy, it's because they have crazy tax policy. Why aren't they flocking to New York? Why aren't they flocking to Vermont? Because they have environments that are hostile to business, because they have this socialistic mindset. And it's reflected. It's reflected across the board. So big business attacking the very conservatives and conservative ideals that has fostered the environment that has allowed them to prosper. As the Lieutenant Governor, Dan Forrest, who's been on the program before, said, I think yesterday, when PayPal and others threatened to leave and we're gonna pack up and go home, he said, okay, bye. But good for them. I mean, someone else will come and fill the space, as we talked about in Houston. They're seeing massive expansion of office space and retail space because people are flocking there because of the favorable environment for business. Look, business will go to where it is most favorable, not where they have social policy that is leftist in its orientation, because with that comes a leftist socialist economic policy, which is not good for business. So go ahead, big business. Go ahead. You know, make your alliance with the left. And when you're looking for help to get the tax, favorable tax policies and those zoning ordinances, that regulation eliminated, I don't think you're going to find it with your new teammates. All right, folks, out of time. Thanks for joining us. Check out the website, TonyPerkins.com. Until next time, the Apostle Paul tells us what we should do in Ephesians 6. What's that? Well, just keep standing.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is a production of the Family Research Council in Washington, D.C. For more information on anything you heard today, or if you'd like to find out how you can support the ongoing efforts of the Family Research Council, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our new watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.